In my worldview, the Amazon rainforest is the most fascinating and the most mysterious place of the Earth's surface today in the 21st century. It sprawls seemingly endlessly across a vast area of South America, roughly 6 million square kilometers all in. An area of land that's about equivalent to 3/4 the size of the continental 48 United States. The majority of the rainforest, about 60% of it, is all contained within the borders of Brazil. But significant parts of it also extend out across the borders of parts of Peru, Colombia, Ecuador, Bolivia, Venezuela, Guyana, Suriname, and French Guyana as well. This huge area of the continent that the Amazon covers is extremely sparsely populated today and rural, with only around 30 million total residents spread out all across it, which is even fewer people today than live in Poland. If the Amazon rainforest was its own independent country, it would be among the bottom 10 countries in the entire world in terms of average population density, with only about 5 human beings per square kilometer on average. But by far the largest single concentration of people within the Amazon rainforest region today is this random-looking blob of high population density almost in the dead center of it, which is the Brazilian city of Manaus. Home to well over 2 million people today, Manaus is the 7th largest city in Brazil, but its weird location in the middle of the Amazon also makes it the most heavily isolated city in the entire Western Hemisphere to have a population of more than 1 million people, as there isn't a single other city of comparable size to it anywhere within 1,000 kilometers in every direction. And so, as you'd expect, actually physically getting yourself there doesn't work like most other cities do. There still aren't any paved roads that connect Manaus to the rest of the Brazilian core thousands of kilometers away to the east. It's theoretically possible to drive from cities like Sao Paulo or Rio de Janeiro to Manaus, but for hundreds of kilometers along Brazilian Highway 319, the route is currently unpaved, and whenever it rains there, which, believe it or not, is a frequent occurrence in the rainforest, the unpaved road turns into a muddy quagmire with endless nothing all around it. No cell service, and no chance of getting a tow truck to bail yourself out. So that road is a pretty sketchy option to actually take. And even when you get to the other end of the highway close by to Manaus, you'll still have to take a ferry over to the city since the entire length of the Amazon River still doesn't have a single bridge that crosses over it. The primary actually paved road that connects Manaus to the rest of the outside world runs to the north of it up towards Venezuela, Brazilian Highway 174. This route makes it, at least in theory, sort of possible to safely drive along paved roads to the rest of the Brazilian core. But the catch is that you'd have to travel all the way around through Venezuela, Colombia, and Peru just to re-enter back into Brazil again. Meaning that for most practical purposes, the only ways that most people from the rest of Brazil usually get to Manaus isn't by land, but by airplane or by taking a boat down the Amazon River itself, which is fully navigable to ocean-going vessels for about 2/3 of its course deep into the continental interior. Another similar blob of high population density in the middle of the modern Amazon is the Peruvian city of Iquitos, which is home to around 500,000 people today and is in theory even more isolated than Manaus is. Not because of distance from other large settlements, but because of logistics. Other than for a single 100-kilometer dead-end stretch of road that ends in the nearby town of Nauta, there aren't any other roads at all that connect Iquitos with anywhere in the outside world, which makes it the largest city in the world that can't be reached by road that isn't on an island. Iquitos exists precisely where it does because it sits at about the exact spot on the Amazon River that's still fully navigable all the way out to the Atlantic Ocean, which has always provided a free-to-use and easy-to-use superhighway for Peruvian and Brazilian merchants to take transporting the Amazon's resources out to the global market. Rather than using cars, trucks, or trains, the Amazon River itself provides nearly all of the transportation to the few big modern cities in the Amazon, like Manaus and Iquitos. So much so that when you travel along it, you'll even see floating gas stations and convenience stores for boats instead of cars. And so, as you'd expect, proper road infrastructure throughout the Amazon region is extremely hard to come by, and even the major clusters of people within it don't really have any major roads extending out from them, since the Amazon River is their primary method of transportation and connection to the outside world instead. This means that there are huge swaths of the Amazon rainforest that are completely absent of any roads at all, which makes driving through most of it an impossible feat. While trekking through the rainforest on foot is an extremely arduous process as well, simply because of the unbelievable density of trees here, once you get out beyond the major settlements and highways. It's been estimated that there are probably somewhere around 390 billion individual trees densely packed all throughout the Amazon rainforest, which is nearly 4 times as many stars as exist in the entire Milky Way galaxy. A single square kilometer of the forest can contain up to 150,000 individual trees and well over 90,000 tons of plant biomass. A fact that can be clearly seen when you look at images like these ones of the city of Manaus that butts right up against the boundary with the Amazon. On one side, you have a dense city that's like an island of civilization, and on the other, you literally have 1,000 kilometers of super dense, wild rainforest that's mostly just empty of people. So observing what the Amazon's actual surface looks like from the ground, from anywhere beyond the Amazon River, or from the handful of roads and settlements dotted throughout it, has always been very difficult. While for most of modern history, observing what the Amazon surface looked like from the air with aircraft or even with satellites have also been practically impossible because of just how insanely dense and thick the rainforest canopy is everywhere throughout it. As a result, the vast surface area of the Amazon rainforest that lies beneath the canopy we can see from the sky easily contains the largest amount of unexplored, unmapped, and uncharted land area remaining anywhere on the Earth's surface in the 21st century, with some scientists arguing that we currently understand even less about it than we do the surface of Mars. That's why, in my view, it's the most mysterious and the most interesting place remaining on the map in the 21st century. And all of a sudden, very recently, modern advances in the fields of cartography and archaeology, like LiDAR scanning, are finally, after all this time, enabling us to penetrate through the previously impenetrable rainforest canopy to see the Amazon surface like we've never seen it before. And the last blank space on the Earth's surface filled up by the world's biggest rainforest is finally beginning to get mapped out and filled in. And some of the things that we've already discovered down there just over the past decade alone have been so profoundly shocking, they've begun to upend our entire views on history and science in the process. And even more incredible discoveries down there are probably coming very soon. In order to understand why some of these recent discoveries beneath the Amazon canopy have been so shocking, you need to understand what the general historical view on the Amazon region has been within mainstream academia for centuries, how they came to those conclusions, and why they've all of a sudden, very recently this decade in the 2020s, begun to be proven incorrect. You see, for the past several centuries, the generally accepted mainstream view on the Amazon was that it had always been basically a pristine, largely untouched wilderness environment, mostly undisturbed and unaltered by human beings. This view was reinforced by the fact that for the past several centuries, pretty much ever since Europeans first arrived in the Americas, the Amazon has always appeared to be very sparsely populated by indigenous people in groups no larger than on a hunter-gatherer tribal scale, largely because the soil quality throughout the Amazon rainforest is extremely poor and sterile, and not very helpful for large-scale agriculture that would be necessary for larger, more complex civilizations. But this is a pretty weird thing to consider at first, because it almost seems counterintuitive when you say that the soil quality in the Amazon is terrible for crop farming, while it simultaneously supports more than 390 billion trees in the densest and the most biodiverse forest in the world. But the reason for this is very interesting. You see, one of the primary sources of nutrients for all of the plants in the Amazon rainforest actually comes from a highly unexpected source, far away on a completely different continent. Here at the southernmost edge of the Sahara Desert in central Chad lies the Boundiali Depression, an ancient dried-up lake bed that used to be a part of the primordial Lake Mega-Chad until it was consumed by the expansion of the Sahara several thousand years ago. Now, the dried-up lake bed in the Boundiali Depression here contains massive amounts of exposed rock minerals composed of dead microorganisms that are chock-full of phosphorus, an essential nutrient that fertilizes plants for growth. The powerful trade winds that whip across the Sahara from east to west will then pick up enormous amounts of Saharan dust, including phosphorus-rich dust from around the Bodele Depression, and will then continue carrying all of that dust for thousands of kilometers through the air across the Atlantic and towards South America, where about 28 million tons of Saharan dust will fall across the Amazon rainforest throughout an average year, including about 22,000 tons of phosphorus that was picked up from the Bodele Depression in Chad, that provides the Amazon with vitally needed nutrients. But because rainfall throughout the Amazon rainforest is extremely high, these nutrients that arrive from the Sahara are always rapidly washed out from the soil and eventually drained down into the Amazon River itself, which means that the trees and other plants in the Amazon have evolved to essentially pull up the nutrients from the soil about as soon as they're deposited there. Moreover, the very high year-round temperatures in the rainforest and the high humidity levels means that dead organic material like leaves and fallen plants or trees decompose extremely rapidly, which means that their stored nutrients are released and lost very rapidly and reconsumed by other plants and fungi before they can ever be deposited into the soil. This all means that the soils of the Amazon never really gain any buildup of nutrients at all, since all of the trees and the other plants within the rainforest are literally living on the recycled nutrients of all the other trees around them. And so the soils themselves are effectively sterile and useless for agriculture, which is why, historically, most of the scientific community considered large-scale agriculture in the Amazon region to be impossible, which is why they believed that the existence of large-scale, complex indigenous societies within the Amazon were also impossible as well. The prominent American archaeologist Betty Meggers, who specialized in South American anthropology through the Smithsonian Institution throughout the 20th century, was a very well-known advocate of this idea. She wrote a whole book that was published in 1971 titled Amazonia, Man and Culture in a Counterfeit Paradise, in which she argued that without agriculture in the Amazon being possible, the maximum population density that the Amazon rainforest could naturally support through hunting and gathering was only 0.2 people per square kilometer. And so, the Amazon had to be an extremely sparsely populated place throughout its entire history as a result. This view was reinforced over centuries by the fact that European settlers and explorers and their descendants only ever seemed to encounter small tribes of indigenous people in the rainforest, hundreds of which continue to exist across the remote depths of the Amazon still today. In fact, it's estimated that still today, even in the 21st century, the Amazon rainforest is so vast, so remote, and so difficult to access from the outside that there are still around 100 or so indigenous tribes dotted throughout it that remain so-called uncontacted, maintaining their traditional hunter-gatherer lifestyles like their ancestors have for thousands of years with little, if any, contact with the outside world. The Amazon is the host of the largest number of remaining uncontacted people in the world today, and while estimates of their exact numbers are highly varied, it's generally believed that there are around 10,000 of them scattered throughout the rainforest, hiding from the outside world, only observed by us every so often from striking aerial photographs like these ones I'm showing to you right now. But they aren't really uncontacted in the way you think they are. They're pretty much all universally aware of the existence of the outside world and have a very long history of contact with us. But they voluntarily choose to hide and remain isolated in the rainforest because they deeply fear what the outside world will do to them if they're found. Over the past several centuries since the arrival of Europeans, and even over just the past few decades in recent living memory, countless numbers of these isolated Amazonian tribes have been massacred and enslaved by the outsiders. Across the late 19th and early 20th century, when the importance of rubber as a strategic material exploded, the rubber tree that's naturally indigenous to the Amazon basin correspondingly exploded in value and importance as well, which resulted in an unprecedented surge of European colonists flocking into the Amazon basin to strike out their fortunes, and was the catalyst for the growth of the few big Amazonian cities along the navigable stretch of the Amazon River, like Manaus and Iquitos I mentioned previously. However, as the demand for labor on the growing Amazonian rubber plantations expanded, the European owners of the plantations engaged in massive slave raids on the Amazon's indigenous populations and forced hundreds of thousands of them to work on the rubber plantations in appalling conditions with extremely high mortality rates, as high as 90% in some instances, that some historians have compared in scale and brutality to the Holocaust or the Armenian Genocide. In the aftermath of the rubber boom in the mid to late 20th century, the indigenous survivors of this genocide in the Amazon fled into the most remote and difficult to access depths of the rainforest, with their memories of the horrors the outside world inflicted upon them passed down through the generations. So, rather than keeping themselves hidden from the outside world because they just prefer to keep their more traditional, simple lifestyles, they really keep themselves hidden out of this very deeply ingrained fear of what the outside world will do to them again if contact with us is ever re-established. A fear that hasn't helped out very much by the action of loggers, miners, missionaries, drug traffickers, and even anthropologists in recent history either. Throughout the 1960s and 70s, the Brazilian government basically treated the Amazon basin as an empty place full of resources that was holding the country's development back, and the indigenous people within were largely sidelined or even killed. One indigenous tribe in the Rondônia region of the Brazilian Amazon was almost completely massacred by Brazilian gunmen hired by ranchers and settlers there in the 1970s, down to only a single survivor, a man who kept on living a militantly reclusive and distant life in the rainforest for decades up until he passed away from natural causes just a few years ago in 2022. For decades, nobody alive knew anything about the man, not his name, his language, or the name of his extinct tribe. But they well understood his fears and his intense desire to be left alone from the outside world, as he frequently shot arrows at anyone who ever attempted to initiate contact with him for years. He eventually gained the nickname of the Man of the Hole due to the deep ditches he would frequently dig around his campsites for protection. The Brazilian Ministry of Native People discovered him in the late 1990s and eventually fenced off the entire area where the man lived and created a nature reserve out of the area in 2007, which became this isolated island of forest with a lone, uncontacted indigenous man inside of it, surrounded by a sea of deforested cattle ranches, until the man inside died of natural causes in 2022, leaving his unknown tribe's modern genocide ultimately completed. Throughout the 1970s and 80s, the Brazilian government tried to establish peaceful contact with indigenous tribes in the Amazon by setting up trading posts in the rainforest with metal tools and other useful objects. But the posts would occasionally lead to violent interactions with the tribes and would frequently spread outside diseases to the tribes that they lacked any immunities to, in a process that has gone on ever since Europeans first discovered the New World a half millennia ago, which would sometimes wipe out half of a tribe's population within only a matter of weeks. These disasters eventually led the Brazilian Department of Unknown Tribes to take a radically different approach starting in 1987, when they decided that isolated tribes in the Amazon shouldn't ever be contacted by the outside world at all unless they, the tribes, voluntarily chose to initiate contact first, creating a sort of real-world prime directive from Star Trek in the process. This was also a part of the late 20th century Brazilian government's creation of the indigenous territories across the country that are heavily concentrated within the Brazilian Amazon, which are currently more than 700 areas set aside for exclusive use by the country's indigenous population, including the Vale do Javari in the far west of the Brazilian Amazon here, which is believed to contain the highest concentration of uncontacted people in the entire Amazon and, by extension, in the entire world. The territory is roughly the same size as Portugal, and it's completely illegal for any unqualified outsider to enter into it. And it contains an estimated 14 separate uncontacted tribes within it, numbering around 2,000 people all in all, who are occasionally observed by the Brazilian government from the air, which is where most of these striking aerial photographs of uncontacted people in the Amazon have come from. The Vale do Javari itself is part of a much wider area today that's known as the Uncontacted Frontier, an arc of the remote western Amazon region that straddles the border between Brazil, Peru, and Bolivia. That's arguably the single most remote location anywhere on the Earth's surface that remains in the 21st century. Nowhere else in the world today are there more uncontacted people than here, including a highly elusive tribe known as the Mashco Piro on the Peruvian side of the uncontacted frontier, around 50 of whom were recently seen and photographed by an organization known as Survival International in July of 2024. During a very rare encounter with the outside world. Because of these very recent photos and this encounter, the Mashco Piro are now believed to be the single largest uncontacted tribe remaining in the Amazon and in the world, probably numbering around 750 total individuals. Their location was also notably captured here only a few kilometers away from an active logging company, which Survival International says threatens the tribe's continued existence. Critics of the Brazilian system of indigenous territories argue that they permanently reserve about 13% of the country's total land area to a small population of indigenous people that only make up 0.4% of Brazil's total population, and that much land full of valuable resources getting locked out from development is holding the country's economic development and potential prosperity back in the process. Illegal logging, ranching, and mining within several of the indigenous territories is already a relatively common practice. But the arguments in favor of preserving the system aren't just for the rights of the indigenous people who live there, but also to protect the unknown scale of the biodiversity in the Amazon and the unknown species of plants and animals that are almost certainly still existing there, currently unknown to science. We have understood for a very long time now that the Amazon is by far the most biodiverse ecosystem on the planet. It's estimated that a whopping 1 in every 10 known species in the world lives just within the Amazon rainforest, including at least 2.5 million species of insects, tens of thousands of plant species, and around 2,000 bird and mammal species, along with a whopping 1 in every 5 fish species which live in the Amazon rivers and streams. There's a scientific study from 2001 that concluded just a quarter of a square kilometer in the Amazon rainforest in Ecuador was capable of supporting more than 1,100 separate individual species of tree. The biodiversity of species within the rainforest is so high compared to any other location in the world that brand new Amazon species are still being cataloged by the scientific community just about every single day on average. According to the Brazilian National Institute of Amazonian Research, headquartered in Manaus, an estimated 60% of the tree species within the Amazon have yet to be properly cataloged and identified. And there's no telling how many insect, bird, reptile, and mammal species remain undiscovered deep within it as well. Some of the most recent animal discoveries made in the Amazon have been particularly interesting, such as this red-striped monkey that was only discovered in 2015, this species of dart frog that was only found in 1999, this bald parrot that was only discovered in 1999 as well, or this unique species of blind and bright red catfish that was only discovered in the waters of the Amazon in 2007. There's even a huge new species of northern green anaconda that was only very recently discovered in the Amazon by researchers this year in 2024, that could potentially be the biggest snake species in the world, though that's currently unconfirmed. Some Amazon researchers believe that the current pace of deforestation going on in the rainforest is destroying the remaining unknown species hidden there faster than they are being discovered. And there's probably entire species currently going extinct there before the scientific community even becomes aware of them. And there's always the very slight possibility that deep within the rainforest's most uncharted and unexplored depths, there could be exotic large animal species that remain undiscovered as well. One of the biggest examples in recent history of a large, previously unknown animal species getting discovered by the scientific community was the case of the zoola, a large forest-dwelling bovine creature that was only unexpectedly discovered deep within the jungles of rural Vietnam in 1992, and only first photographed in 1993. And the deepest depths of the Amazon are even more remote and difficult to access than where the zoola was discovered in Vietnam, so who knows? There's a very popular legend among several indigenous tribes in the Amazon of a mythical monster that's colloquially known as the Mapanguari. And while descriptions of the legend vary widely from tribe to tribe, there are some who believe that many of the descriptions of it closely match that of the giant ground sloth known as the Megatherium, which used to exist across the South American continent before it probably went extinct sometime around 11,000 years ago. The Megatherium was a giant ground sloth that was about the same size as a modern-day African elephant, and a very recent discovery in 2023 nearby to the Amazon of a set of Megatherium bones modified into jewelry appears to suggest that at some point in history, indigenous people in the Americas used to live side by side with the giant ground sloth, the knowledge of which could have potentially been passed down orally from generation to generation and eventually became the basis for the modern Mapanguari myth. But that hasn't stopped some people from speculating that the continued reportings of the Mapanguari by indigenous tribes in the Amazon suggest that the Megatherium could still have survived after all this time somewhere deep inside of the rainforest. But that's probably not the most likely possibility, because a creature of that enormous a size would leave behind major signs of its existence, like carcasses, hair, droppings, remains and predator droppings, and much more, that have to date never actually been found. And even though the Amazon is a big and remote place, hiding a creature of that size for this long would still probably be almost impossible. But that doesn't mean it isn't still fun to think about and speculate. If a large, living, extant land animal currently unknown to science was going to exist anywhere on the Earth's surface today, it probably would be somewhere deep within the Amazon, hidden beneath the canopy. And while one of the most fascinating recent scientific discoveries made within the Amazon wasn't of a large, legendary living animal, it was still just about as exciting as one anyway. In 2011, a geoscientist named Andres Ruzo, who grew up in Peru, Nicaragua, and the United States, had heard legends dating back to his childhood of a boiling hot river that supposedly existed somewhere deep within the Amazon. So that year, he set out on an expedition deep within the rainforest of central Peru to try and see if he could find it. And sure enough, hundreds of kilometers away from the nearest active volcano, he stumbled upon the legendary boiling river, now known to the outside world as the Xanay-Tempixca, a fully flowing 6.5-kilometer-long river whose waters average a scalding temperature of nearly 86 degrees Celsius, or 186 Fahrenheit. Not exactly boiling, technically speaking, but still hot enough to almost instantly kill any animal or person unfortunate enough to fall inside. The local indigenous people had, of course, known about the boiling river in the Amazon for generations. But until Ruzo's encounter with the river in 2011, it remained completely unknown to the rest of us in the outside world outside of legend. And it's now understood to be the longest and hottest boiling river known in the world. A natural wonder as wide as a 2-lane street and nearly 5 meters or 16 feet deep in places. Made even more puzzling that it isn't volcanic activity that causes the river to get so hot, but a geothermal feature beneath the area instead. And almost a century before Ruzo's expedition in the Peruvian Amazon revealed the boiling river to Western science based only on hearing about a legend, another Western explorer sent out on a series of expeditions across the Amazon based on hearing similar rumors and legends about long-lost civilizations and ruins hidden deep within the Amazon despite the contrary academic consensus. A British man named Percy Harrison Fawcett. In the early 20th century, Fawcett became obsessed with finding a lost civilization in the Amazon rainforest that he believed existed, and which he steadily began to call the Lost City of Z. Part of his convictions on this lost civilization's existence stemmed from the historical record of early European explorers in the Amazon, like Francisco de Orellana, a Spanish conquistador who became the first European to sail through the entire length of the Amazon River between 1541 and 1542 during his search for the legendary city of El Dorado. During his early voyage through the Amazon, Orellana reported coming across several large indigenous cities that featured dense populations, organized armies, fortified towns, well-developed and maintained roads, and even monumental construction projects. Reporting that for centuries was widely believed to be nothing more than the wild exaggerations of a glory-hungry conquistador. Countless expeditions across the following centuries were made in the Amazon to try and find any traces of these lost cities, but none were ever successful, and the legends of them inspired Fawcett to begin his own expeditions for them in the early 20th century. For nearly 20 years between 1906 and 1924, Fawcett took 7 expeditions throughout the Amazon region in search of his lost city of Z, with a heavy focus on the southeastern Amazon in Brazil and the western Amazon region in Bolivia and Peru. But over all that time, he never ended up discovering anything very substantial. No giant stone ruins, no lost cities, and only small bands of indigenous tribes in little villages. In 1925, Fawcett organized his 8th and ultimately final expedition to find the lost city of Z, along with his son, a friend, 2 horses, 8 mules, and a pair of dogs. They set out from the city of Cuiaba on the edge of the Amazon in western Brazil, and after they crossed the upper Xingu River into the rainforest itself, none of them were ever seen or heard from again, and simply vanished into the vastness of the Amazon forever. Their ultimate fates still unknown to us an entire century later. Fawcett's ill-fated expeditions that failed to find any lost civilizations in the Amazon appear to only further support the mainstream consensus that such Amazonian civilizations never actually existed, and that the rainforest had always been a largely pristine, sparsely inhabited wilderness. But then, several decades later, beginning in the 1970s, a series of steady archaeological discoveries in the Amazon would slowly begin to shift this centuries-long-held viewpoint. In 1977, a researcher named Ondemar Dias discovered a series of large-scale man-made geoglyphs within the Acre region of the Brazilian Amazon, in recently deforested land there. Well, even further discoveries were made by flying aircraft over the region. To date, since that time, literally hundreds of these kinds of complex geoglyphs have been discovered by researchers across the Acre region that have been dated to have been constructed between 1 AD and 1250. Which suddenly reignited the interest in the possibility of there maybe being advanced pre-Columbian civilizations in the rainforest that had remained undiscovered. In the Apano Valley region of the Amazon in eastern Ecuador, traces of settlements were discovered by researchers in the 1970s. And then, more clues there began to get uncovered by archaeologists led by Stephen Rostain with France's National Center for Scientific Research, who began excavations in the area in the 1990s when they began discovering large dugout ditches and even roads that had been long overgrown by the rainforest's foliage. At around the same time in the 1990s, another team of archaeologists led by Michael Heckenberger from the University of Florida began exploring an area in the upper Xingu region of Brazil, very nearby to the area where Fawcett mysteriously disappeared from in the 1920s during his search for the lost city of Z. And they also discovered ancient roads, bridges, and ditches that appear to form the remnants of long-lost walls, moats, and causeways that over decades of hands-on, on-the-ground studying steadily added up to a collection of at least 19 large pre-planned pre-Columbian villages in the region that featured well-planned circular plazas. But researchers still didn't generally consider this to be a truly urbanized area of the pre-Columbian past. None of the discovered settlements here in the Upper Xingu had clearly defined urban centers with monumental architecture you would expect in civilizations, like U-shaped temples or pyramids. And so, they appear to be more of a collection of Amazonian villages networked together rather than any true large-scale civilization. Their discovery, nonetheless, encouraged further searches in other areas of the Amazon, though, such as in the Llanos de Mojos region of the Amazon in northern Bolivia, where on-the-ground research and limited remote sensing studies steadily revealed a similar pattern as in the upper Xingu region. Dozens to even hundreds of isolated small villages across an area roughly the size of Rhode Island. But even though hundreds of kilometers worth of overgrown canals and causeways were discovered here, and there was abundant evidence of pre-Columbian agriculture and forest management, the logistical problems involved with actually mapping the entire region out in a deeply remote part of the rainforest shrouded from above by the densest forest canopy in the world proved to make connecting all of the numerous dots in the region an almost impossible task. And so for a while, it was pretty unclear if all of these small settlements were even related to each other or not. The signs were there of a potential lost civilization in the Bolivian Amazon for decades. But without any clear urban centers discovered in the puzzle, the researchers mostly just had a series of lost villages instead. But all of that would finally and very suddenly change only very recently in 2022, when a team of archaeologists operating in the region led by Heiko Prümers of the German Archaeological Institute released an earth-shattering paper in the journal Nature. His team pursued a different approach that utilized a new key technology that is quickly revolutionizing the field of archaeology and our understanding of what exists beneath the Amazon rainforest. LIDAR, an acronym for Laser Imaging Detection and Ranging. Flying in a helicopter about 200 meters or 650 feet up above the floor of the rainforest, the team used an onboard LIDAR system to shoot down a grid of infrared beams down to the surface that ignore the dense foliage in the canopy, hit whatever is actually down below on the surface, and then bounce back up to the system on the helicopter with a measure of distance in between. As the helicopter flies over the area being surveyed, the LIDAR system steadily creates a colossal number of data points that eventually creates a high-resolution map of the surveyed area without any of the trees being present, which reveals what the area actually looks like. Using this more modern technique, the team led by Prümers carried out LIDAR mapping surveys of 6 different areas in the Llanos de Mojos region that revealed a total of 26 unique archaeological sites in the region, 11 of which were previously totally unknown to science. And 2 of those sites that were revealed were especially interesting, because for the first time in modern history, the LIDAR maps revealed them to actually be very significant pre-Columbian cities, complete with the monumental architecture that had always been missing from countless searches in the Amazon over the past nearly five centuries of history. The sites included mud brick conical pyramids that stood more than 21 meters or 70 feet tall, on the scale of several Mayan pyramids known to exist in Central America. And they were shown to anchor a web of sprawling smaller settlements, all connected by causeways and roads that stretched out for several kilometers. And there were even canals and a complex water management system that connected the main urban centers with nearby rivers. The team believes that the settlements were abandoned around 600 years ago, sometime around the year 1400, nearly a century before the arrival of the Europeans, for unknown reasons. But their existence finally proved that dense, complex societies within the Amazon rainforest capable of building monumental architecture did indeed exist at some point in the pre-Columbian past, and that the Amazon was significantly more densely populated in the past than previously believed. The Llanos de Mojos region in the Amazon alone, a region roughly the size of England, is now believed to have supported as many as 1 million people before the arrival of Columbus. And it was all right in the middle of many of the areas that were explored by Fawcett's Lost City of Z expeditions more than 100 years ago. Fawcett didn't discover any ruins of long-lost cities in the area because, it turned out, he was ultimately searching for the wrong kinds of things. The unknown society that built these pyramids and cities in the Amazon of northern Bolivia didn't use stone like the Maya, Inca, or Aztecs did that stood the test of time better and made them easier to find. Instead, they used other natural materials that were more readily available to them in this environment, like mud bricks and wood. So, while back in their heyday, their cities probably looked every bit as impressive as the Mayan cities do to us today, the materials they used decomposed more quickly over the centuries of abandonment and weren't as durable. So they ended up just blending in far better with the overgrowth of the Amazon that reclaimed them over centuries without human intervention. The discovery of these long-lost monumental cities hidden under the rainforest canopy for centuries in northern Bolivia was the most significant archaeological discovery made in the region for the century. And Heiko Prümers even prophetically predicted that over the next 10 or 20 years, even more previously unknown cities in the Amazon would probably get discovered, that would include some even bigger and more complex than the Llanos de Mojos site. And it would only take fewer than 2 years for him to be proven right. Because just this year, back in January of 2024, another earth-shattering paper was published by Stephen Rothstein and his team that concerned their own year's worth of discoveries and research back in the Upano Valley site that I touched on a bit previously in the Amazon of eastern Ecuador. As I mentioned previously, Rothstein and the French National Center for Scientific Research had been engaged in research in Ecuador's eastern Upano Valley site for decades since the 1990s. And just like in the Upper Zingo and Llanos de Mojos sites, his team had found evidence of small central plazas, raised mounds, pottery, and jugs. Scattered evidence of a potential civilization, but without a complete map of the entire region obscured by the rainforest canopy, it was impossible for them to put all of these pieces together. Everything changed, however, in 2015, when the Ecuadorian government agreed to fund a LIDAR survey of the Upano Valley to finally reveal what was all hidden there beneath the foliage. Over the next several years, Rothstein's team used aircraft and onboard LIDAR combined with extensive ground excavations to painstakingly survey and map out a 300 square kilometer area within the Upano Valley region of the Ecuadorian Amazon. And they published all of their years worth of findings in the journal Nature in early 2024. And their LIDAR survey mapped out what can only be described as the ruins of a truly lost major ancient civilization that used to exist in the Amazon. Their survey in this 300 square kilometer area, about the same size as the island of Malta, uncovered more than 6,000 individual rectangular platforms that measured about 20 meters by 10 meters and about 2 to 3 meters high, all arranged in groups of between 3 and 6 units clustered around a plaza with a central platform. These were thousands of long-abandoned homes, with areas of especially dense settlement concentrations forming heavily urbanized areas. And one of the structures their LIDAR uncovered within the plaza of one of the densest complexes was a massive 140 meter by 40 meter and 5 meter tall platform, probably the site of long-lost monumental buildings that were used for ceremonies. The settlements were all surrounded by webs of agricultural fields, complete with extensive drainage canals and all interconnected by a huge network of long-lost and unused roads that included multiple impressive features. One of the roads observed by the survey was more than 25 kilometers long, and several of the roads included direct right angles, a difficult engineering feat for any society to have accomplished here in the geographically rough terrain. Defensive ditches were observed blocking some of the settlements from outside attack, and like in Llanos de Mojos in Bolivia, a vast network of causeways and canals were discovered that brought abundant water to the area as well. This discovery in the Ecuadorian Amazon revealed a society that was even denser and more complex than the previously discovered one in Llanos de Mojos in Bolivia, which itself was also an earth-shattering discovery in its own right. Some of the researchers involved have even postulated that back in their prime, the previously unknown about cities, streets, and monuments that the indigenous people constructed here in the Apano Valley rivaled or even surpassed those of the much more well-known Maya civilization in Central America. While the team who wrote the paper on the Apano Valley discovery stressed that estimating the site's previous population is extremely difficult, the paper's co-author, archaeologist Anton Dorison, suggested that as many as 30,000 people could have lived there at its peak, which would have put it on about the same scale as Roman-era London. Other experts believe that the Apano Valley site could have supported even more people, potentially as high as even 100,000 or so, which, if that's true, would have made it among the largest human settlements anywhere in the world at the time when it was populated. The other fascinating thing about this discovery is that it's believed to be ancient. Like, really ancient. The team dated the area to be inhabited sometime between around 500 BC at the earliest to sometime between 300 to 600 AD at the latest, meaning that whatever civilization existed here did so for around 1,000 years, along the same rough timeline as the Roman Empire in Western Europe did. By the time the European conquistadors arrived in the Amazon, these ancient civilizations' ruins had already been abandoned for around 1,000 years, and largely left behind to be reclaimed by the rainforest. Which is no wonder why it was never rediscovered by anyone until the very late 20th to early 21st centuries. It's not very often that an entirely brand new civilization previously unknown to recorded history gets discovered these days in the 21st century. But that's exactly what the Apano Valley site discovery was, and why it is arguably, at least in my opinion, one of the most important archaeological discoveries of this entire century. The area around this part of the Amazon on the eastern slope of the Andes Mountains has soils that are richer than elsewhere in the rainforest because they've been fertilized by rich volcanic ash from nearby volcanoes, which is also a potential explanation for why the site was eventually abandoned. One of the volcanic eruptions nearby may have been big enough to have caused an apocalypse. But interestingly, small pockets of fertile soils have been recently discovered all throughout the Amazon rainforest by archaeologists that's called terra preta, or black soil translated literally from Portuguese. These pockets of terra preta are now understood to have been man-made. It was created by indigenous people adding a mixture of charcoal, bones, compost, and manure to the infamously sterile Amazonian soil. The charcoal they added would then remain stable within the soil for literally thousands of years, which binded and retained the soil's minerals and nutrients and turned its color into its characteristic black appearance. By doing this, indigenous people were able to create fertile soils out of the Amazon themselves, and modern archaeologists have discovered patches of terra preta all throughout the rainforest over the past few decades, with the probability of this fertile soil type appearing believed to be particularly high along the many rivers and streams located all throughout the rainforest. This all means that the long-held notions we've maintained for centuries about the Amazon being a sparsely populated, nearly pristine wilderness absent of civilizations have been dead wrong. And we're only just starting to understand what could all actually be hidden out there. We now understand that prior to the arrival of the Europeans, the Amazon was in fact a densely populated place that hosted complex civilizations. And there could have been as many as 8 million or more indigenous people living throughout the Amazon around the year 1500. Also at around the same time, it's also now believed that as much as 1/5 of the current Amazon rainforest was an open savanna-type environment back then, which enabled Amazonian civilizations an environment to more easily thrive in, that was only taken over by the rainforest in the centuries after the Europeans arrived and caused an apocalypse to take place there. Introduced diseases brought by the Europeans, like smallpox and measles, coupled with their own violence, decimated the indigenous populations of the Americas, including the indigenous people of the Amazon. When Francisco de Orellana sailed down the Amazon River in the 1540s, he actually probably did encounter very large Amazonian settlements and organized armies and societies. But over the centuries that followed from then, disease and brutality steadily took its toll on the rainforest's indigenous population, to the point where by the turn of the 20th century in 1900, their population had probably fallen from 8 million in 1500 to fewer than 1 million. While by the 1980s, their numbers crashed even further to fewer than only 200,000 people remaining. Far from being an untouched, pristine wilderness, the Amazon essentially became the world's best-preserved post-apocalyptic landscape instead, that was so well hidden by the overgrowth of the rainforest over centuries without anybody left behind to manage it, that we didn't even realize it was a major civilizational post-apocalyptic landscape until, like, literally just a couple of years ago. This all ultimately means that additional huge civilizational discoveries could be made out there in the future, and the Rothstein-led team that made the massive Upano Valley discovery in eastern Ecuador is already preparing to survey another 300 square kilometer site with LIDAR that's directly adjacent to the 300 square kilometer site that they already surveyed, which could turn up even more history-changing discoveries soon. And as LIDAR is used by more and more scientists and explorers in the 21st century to steadily peel back the foliage that has hidden the secrets of the Amazon for centuries, we will finally start to understand the complete map of the Amazon rainforest in the years and decades ahead. And there's just no telling what future great archaeological discoveries await us there. The rainforest still has a very low population density today, which means that the ruins and relics of these previously unknown Amazonian civilizations have been left almost completely undisturbed for centuries or even millennia. And as a result, the Amazon rainforest remains today the final vast location on the Earth's surface where previously hidden archaeological wonders could still lie, just waiting to be rediscovered again and understood by us. The Amazon will probably be the epicenter of major future archaeological discoveries throughout the rest of this decade and into the 2030s. And you should pay very close attention to all of it, because it is all a very, very exciting time. We already know that indigenous peoples in the Amazon grew all kinds of staple crops, from sweet potatoes to maize and others that were traded all throughout the region. But if you're anything like me, you might also be wondering why it still takes so much money and time just to eat more healthily today. The global food supply runs more efficiently than it ever has, but there still seems to be this weird trade-off where you have to choose only two of the following three options with your meals: healthiness, affordability, and quickness. You can have a quick and healthy meal, but it'll be expensive. You can have an affordable and quick meal, but it'll be unhealthy. Or you can have a healthy and affordable meal, but it'll be time-consuming and inconvenient. For a long period in my life, I was really trying hard to figure out the answer to this dilemma by discovering a reliable source of meals that could encompass all three attributes: healthiness, affordability, and quickness. And I eventually discovered and became a customer what ultimately became this video's sponsor, HelloFresh. The concept of HelloFresh is pretty straightforward. You just visit their app or website and select which meals you want to eat, and then the next week, an insulated box will show up on your doorstep filled with all of the fresh, pre-portioned, and partially prepared ingredients you need so that you can home cook your meals way faster than if you had wasted a bunch of time planning your meals out, going to the grocery store and picking out your own ingredients, and then coming home and prepping. And not only that, but you get everything you'll need in exactly the right quantities you need as well. You can also choose from a variety of menu options to suit all your needs and tastes. From fit and wholesome to quick and easy, vegetarian to family friendly, there's something for everyone to enjoy. And HelloFresh knows that your plans might change and life can get unexpectedly busy. That's why they let you easily customize your delivery from week to week as well, allowing you to tailor everything to your own schedule by adjusting your delivery date or skipping a week when you're not able to cook at home. And best of all, the meals themselves just taste really, really good too. That's the biggest reason of all that I've been a loyal customer myself to HelloFresh for years now, and why I've been making meals like this amazing buffalo spiced chicken for more than 3 years now. They're just the best solution that I've ever found for having regular home-cooked dinners. And if you want to see if I'm right and improve the way you eat too, now's a great time to do so, because if you want free breakfast for life, you can go to HelloFresh.com or visit the link down below in the description and use code FREERealLifeLore. That's going to be good for one free breakfast item per box while your subscription is active. And once again, that's free breakfast for life at HelloFresh.com with code FREERealLifeLore. And as always, thank you so much for watching.